Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Spiritual Frequency, a podcast about magic, mysticism, and metaphysics in the modern world. I am Miss Tangie Cassidy, the grown-ass witch, and with me is my bestest friend and co-host.
I'm Miss Dana Jean Walter, and I'm Sonic Priestess, as well as Swordswoman at Camp Athena.
So we thought, since this is our very first episode, we should introduce ourselves and let you get to know what we're about and what our mission is for the spiritual frequency. We're going to try not to get too silly, but as you can imagine, when two best friends get together and start talking, we're going to be editing out a lot.
My goal is not editing, but we do what we can. So here we are, and let's talk a little bit about frequency. Frequency is what makes the universe go round, and the music of the spheres, we have the, you know, the planets and the stars, and everything is making noise all the time. You can't stop the signal, and frequency is what connects us as organisms on this planet with the other organisms on this planet and the planet itself, I believe.
Right.
And frequency has been used throughout antiquity and cultures around the world currently, as well as in the past, and I'm certainly sure in the future, to be that thing that is this connective tissue of our spirit bodies throughout the cosmos.
Right, because we are energy. Everything is energy. And I think that as human beings, we sort of accept that energy is a thing which exists. It's not necessarily a thing that we understand, but we know that it's something that travels and it's something that can be transmitted between things. So our thought about the spiritual frequency is it's just the way that we send our energetic signals back and forth. And every time you have an interaction with someone or something, you're establishing a connection with them and you're getting on their frequency, or they're getting on your frequency, or with any hope, we're all elevating the frequency to another place where we can understand each other on a deeper and more significant level.
Yes, and when we look at how the Schumann resonance, if you're not familiar with the Schumann resonance, I would highly get your Google Foo on and take a look at that. You can actually see that there are many places around the planet that are measuring the Schumann frequency, and what it is a frequency that is a constant that is happening with our planet. It was discovered when we started shooting cosmonauts, when the Soviet Union started shooting them into the off terra firma and circumnavigating the globe in space, that without the Schumann resonance constant, the cosmonauts' physical structure at the cellular level would start to break down with the absence of this frequency. So then they realized very quickly that they needed to pipe that information in constantly. It is present in the background in most of the space shuttle work that we did and on the International Space Station, because it helps when we're in a non-gravity situation. It really helps us not completely break apart and be atrophied. So that was a very hard lesson that they learned, and you can do a bunch of research on that too, but it's pretty much that really strong connective frequency that's fluctuating, but that keeps us all together and at the cellular level. So
right. So it's an energy field in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're into hard science, you can do some research on that and take a look at the Schumann frequency and then start taking a look at energetic fields. There's something that scientists and doctors recognize as the cardiac field, which is, it's this field that surrounds your cells and tells them and informs them that they need to work together to form a tissue or an organ. And there's one specifically that they recognize that forms around your heart that tells those cells and stuff like, okay, now you need to become cardiac tissue. So there's hard science there. We're not just talking woo. Energy is a real thing. Frequency is a real thing. It is what holds us together, not only individually, but collectively. So when we're talking about the spiritual frequency, we're talking about our collective consciousness, not just our individual consciousness.
Right. And there's also the fact that dissonance, which is when things are not in harmony with each other, which in some musical beliefs and styles, like the Western style of music and our scales and the modes that we use to indicate what our popular music is vastly different from that is in the Eastern cultures, which seems to our Western ear to be incredibly dissonant and uncomfortable because of the tones and the spacing between notes that they use as their scales versus what we in the West use as our scales. But it's also subjective and relative to the beholder. So one of the things I always encourage my vocal students is you must open yourself up to as much different kinds of music as possible, because you don't know all the variables about what's possible. And that's much like knowing people. There are so many different people on this planet that all vibe at a different frequency, and they may not be your cup of tea, and that's totally fine, but that does not mean that they're not relative. And as we're working towards a world where we're looking for more tolerance on our economic and our social economic and our political stages and our belief system stages, if we don't know all the music that's possible, how could we possibly know what we do or do not like? And just getting stuck in your rut, like, I dig country music and I don't want to listen to anything country music, or I love jazz and anything else is stupid. Like, that's your preference and that's fine, but navigating the stage with people at work or people that you have to come in contact with to get a bank loan or whatever the thing is, like, frequency is a real thing, and tolerance and acceptance and understanding really starts with frequency.
I think if you want to, like, span the cultural divide, it's important for you to explore the music of different cultures. Because while we may not understand the language, we get something out of the intention and the emotion behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And music and frequency is a universal language. This isn't just happening on this planet. Like, what we're putting out here, beaming out into these satellites, into the cosmos, is traveling into infinity. And even the planets themselves sing their own songs.
Mm-hmm.
We just haven't learned how to translate that necessarily on a day-to-day basis into some data that is widely accepted. But there are people that have been studying that for a very long time who can look at those frequencies that are going on with the planets, or look at what's going on with the sun, and be able to predict some of the impact that it's going to have on this planet. So frequency matters. What you say matters. How you say it probably matters more.
Right. And it was interesting, as we were approaching the 2012, whatever's going to happen with the Mayan calendar and our lack of understanding really of what that meant, I was exposed to a Mayan elder who came through the Twin Cities here, who was talking about something I did not know about Mayan culture with the sun, because they were so tuned in with the sun and literally tuned in, that they have 21 glyphs that represent, this is to my knowledge and I'm totally paraphrasing here, and, you know, somebody could be like, oh, I cry bullshit on you, Dana, and that's fine. I'm fine if you cry bullshit on me if I'm paraphrasing it wrong, because quite honestly, a lot of life has happened since 2012 and it's been kind of hard. So, but what I understand is that the Mayans have 21 glyphs for each day that the sun projects a frequency to the planet in this 21-day cycle. And this particular Mayan elder was trying to help correct some of the pyramidal structures that had been destroyed in Mexico throughout the continent from coast to coast, where ruins had been excavated and structures had been destroyed to make way for progress. And so he was trying to help raise money to repair this kind of what he called this pyramidical machine that is on the whole planet, where we see pyramids throughout all of different ancient cultures, which is a whole other show that we can talk about. But he was talking about how if you know what frequency was being broadcast the day you came onto this earth, the day you were born, you can retune your body, because one of the things he felt was that we as human beings were completely unconnected to the matrix that was the planet's resonant frequency matrix. And so by knowing this tone of the day you were, like what was one of the 21 glyphs that was happening the day you were born, that you can bring your body out of dis-ease back into an alignment with the actual plugging back into the planet, which is where all the insects and the birds and the whales and any and the bats and all the sonic creatures function on this matrix, and the Schumann resonance, I believe, is a part of that. So it was just really eye-opening for me to discover that here was this ancient culture that had this knowledge of how the sun does this. Like, how did they measure that? Like, that was obviously some type of training and innate knowing. But it was just very fascinating to me, and further supported my belief as a woman who works with sound in people that this was a thing. And there's so much we don't know. And so this is our kind of, the spiritual frequency for us is also a stumbly way of us kind of moving through this knowledge that we're coming across and being like, what?
Right. And understand that as humans, our understanding and the way that we interact with frequency is pretty limited.
Mm-hmm.
Even dogs have a wider range of frequency than we do. So when your cats and your dogs are acting in a strange way and interacting with stuff that you can't see or hear, it doesn't mean it's not there. It just means that our ear holes are not able to take in this broad spectrum of frequency and vibration that's going on around us all the time. If you are a person like I am, I'm super sensitive to frequency and vibration. I have a hard time getting into a place that's silent because I'm always picking up stuff. I used to think when I was young that I was going insane because I swore to my parents, like, I can hear the electricity coursing
yep.
through the house.
That's a real thing. You know, and I am terrified of charlottes, which I call the soft way for me to talk about spiders, because I just have a total phobia about them. And I've worked really hard with the archetype of Arachne and Athena to kind of try to overcome, because spiders are they're amazing creatures. But when I found out that, they make webs, so clearly they're about vibration. But when I started in my own practical life, I have a deal with them in terms of how they interact with me. And they have shown up in spiritual practices of things I've done and death rituals that I've done, where they've showed up as an ally. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, don't touch me. But when I sing at them, they respond. And to be able to interact with this creature that I am terrified of in a sonic way changed our relationship, you know? And that to me is if it's possible for frequency to help me overcome such a horrific phobia that I've had. I'm pretty sure it was instilled by Lord of the Rings, because I read it when I was 8. And and then our basement. So I'm pretty sure that that's where that formed, but it really shifted my relationship with them quite a bit, just to be able to understand that they were a sonic creature that I could communicate with directly. Like, leave me alone.
And if we think about like our experiences, if you think about like middle school science fairs, how many kids did projects on how playing music affected their plants that they were growing?
Yep.
Those are experiments in frequency. That's us understanding resonance and how that has an impact on living things. It's not just things that we think of as sentient, although I think everything is sentient. We just don't quite understand it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all speaking the same language. It's just a language of frequency, not necessarily a language of words. So that's important, and you've been learning that since you were a kid. It's just that I don't think a lot of us had people pointing it out to us in that way.
Right, and the fact that we know that music in particular makes us feel things. We could not watch our television shows and our movies if we did not have a musical soundtrack, because music informs us how we're supposed to feel about what we're seeing. So when we talk about frequency, it usually our brains naturally go to things like music and vibration or drumming or rhythm, but sound can be, and if you want to see an amazing example of this, watch the movie that Gregory Hines did called Tap, where it is about listening to, like, in particular, this urban environment and hearing the music of all of the noises working together in a cacophony of sound. We are recording here at our magical house that myself and my two sisters of the Gray live in, called Gray Haven. So Tangi is here with us in the dining room. And speaking of you, let's find out a little bit about you.
Well, it's interesting that we would start in the dining room because we spend a lot of time together eating.
what are you saying, bitch?
Well, because I am a tried and true to the bone kitchen witch, and that's where most of my magic comes from, is the food that I make for people.
Which is glorious and orgasmic. I just wish you could put it in your face like I get to, but you don't get to be as lucky as me. Sorry.
I mean, if we get like 10,000 followers, I'll invite you to dinner. If you, I don't know. We'll figure something out. We'll do a contest.
We'll fly you in. It'll be great.
You'll have to go on Spirit Airlines and it's lesson coach. So maybe.
Our Miss Tangi is a wonderful chef graduate of Le Cordon Bleu.
Yes. That is true. And I started studying culinary arts a long, long time ago, many, many moons ago, over 20 years ago, when I was fortunate enough to live in Italy and have an Italian neighbor take pity on me and cry mercy for the vegetables that I was
killing.
Yeah, doing unspeakable things to you. So she started teaching me how to cook, but that is also one of those moments in my life where I was getting involved with and seeking out community to study witchcraft, and I was really really into studying the Knights Templar. I mean, I was in Italy.
I was like, what do you do when you're in Italy? Oh, you know, study ancient knights of Masonic feats.
Yeah, just study some stuff that could have probably gotten me thrown into jail or executed
or set on
a
fire.
Few centuries ago. So so that it all kind of blends together for me, and I remember the magic happening around me when I was a little girl, just being in my grandmother's kitchen. And full disclosure, I am from the deep south. No, you do not hear that in my voice, but I promise you if I call home and we do a show shortly thereafter, you will.
And that's the Floridian aspect of the south.
So Florida is still the deep south, but it's also its own strange little place. I call myself a Floribian because there's the Florida, so there's this deep south Florida thing, but there's also this Caribbean thing. And growing up in this environment where I was exposed to so many different cultures and so many different belief systems, I think has been a benefit to me as a pagan and finding my way into this community, because seeing people practice different faiths and being exposed to things other than, you know, Southern Baptist Christianity is a game changer, I think, in my life. And being exposed, you know, the culture of people, like for me, my way that I explore culture is with my mouth, right? Like, give me the food. I want to taste what you're eating. I want to know what you're throwing down. And then to be able to find the magic and the folklore that's in food really sort of like opened this world up to me, so that now every time that I cook, I'm cooking with intention. There's a purpose. It's not just to fill my belly. There's magic to be found in the kitchen on a daily if you just know what to look for and how to take some time. And the internet is a great resource for looking at correspondences, for figuring out what different herbs will do, what the cultural significance of certain foods are. So it's January, and I just recently observed a superstition, I thought, when I was growing up, that in our family, my grandmother said, you know, on New Year's Day, you gotta eat black-eyed peas and collard greens. And it's good luck. It's also about prosperity. There's prosperity magic cooked up into that. And So the black eyed peas themselves, for white folk at least, represent coins, so hard money. And the collard greens represent green folding money. So that's about prosperity. And you're going to throw a ham hock in there because that's from a pig. And if a pig doesn't represent, you know, the fatted pig and the fruit of the land, nothing does. So it's all about like putting as much prosperity symbolism into that pot as possible. And then you do different herbs and seasonings that have different meanings as well. I like to throw some bay leaves in mine and attach some wishes to them. And usually it's wishes that have to do with abundance and prosperity. So that's something that I grew up doing. My grandma was doing magic in the kitchen and didn't even know that she was doing magic in the kitchen. And I learned that, you know, like hanging onto her apron strings and plundering her kitchen. So that's where my introduction for magic started, was in the kitchen, and it's probably where my work is the strongest.
Yeah, and as a person who consumes the magic that comes out of your brain, it is quite lovely. And this idea of food is one of the things, I think we're also bankrupt in this country because we have such an amalgamation of cuisine that is then merconized, that it strips out a lot of that. So it's very important for people like you to be, I think, helping people reconnect to what was their heritage, what was their lineage in the kitchen.
Right, because I am a person of Celtic descent, and like we'll make jokes that like, you know, all the Irish eat our potatoes and boiled cabbage and corned beef. But, you know, some of that was of necessity, and some of that has very deep roots into the belief systems of those early folk. So if you start digging into where your food comes from and the legends and mythology that surrounds them, food takes on a whole nother meaning for you. For me, I'm really big on the concept of spiritual nutrition, which is about not only feeding your body food to nourish your body and your spirit, but it's also about all of the other stuff that you're putting into your being. It's not just about what you put into your mouth. It's about what you put into your ears. It's about what you put into your mind. It's about the levels of energy that you allow other people to burden you with. That's all spiritual nutrition. And like most things, some nutrition is good for you and some of it's garbage. Some of it's going to make you sick. Some of it's going to make you light up with a healthy glow. So for me, I'm just working on this concept of how do I break down spiritual nutrition into a way that I can transmit that to other people and help them enrich their lives and be more aware of what they're putting in. I'm never going to be somebody who says, you shouldn't eat that, or you can't eat that, or don't eat that. That's not my place. I'm always wanting to empower people with making choices.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to make an informed choice, then you should just do a little research about what's going on. And for me, spiritual nutrition isn't just about food. Again, it's about all of the other stuff that you put in. It's the music you listen to. It's the television shows that you watch.
The books you read.
The books you read. The newspapers.
The people you hang out with.
Yeah. So if you're sitting around and you're watching a lot of murder TV and reading a bunch of ghost books, guess what's going to start manifesting in your life?
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's stuff you want to call into being, then by all means, surround yourself with it. But be selective. We get inundated with a lot of not so pleasant energy for the sake of entertainment. And I think that as adults, we have the ability to decide, you know what, I'm only going to put good stuff in today.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm in a place where I'm feeling a little spiritually and emotionally fatigued, and I don't want to watch the news today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get on social media today. I'm just going to take a break, and today I'm going to fill it up with reading the poetry of Shel Silverstein and watching like some cute, fuzzy Hallmark stuff that just makes
Fraggle
my heart.
Rock!
Yeah! Get those juicers to work, man. I want to eat some of that candy. So that's a big deal for me, is as a kitchen witch, is helping people understand there is spirituality tied to your food, and then there is stuff that's tied to your nutrition that isn't necessarily something you digest with your belly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of my mission, is to get that information out there, because Spirit has told me, I'm going to give you the transmission and you need to share it.
And a wonderful place that Tanji likes to share this is on her YouTube channel, The Grown Ass Witch, which she does wonderful tutorials and wonderful magical practices that she shares with you on Mondays, isn't that correct?
Yeah, Mondays at 7 o'clock Central Standard Time, and I'll have the links on our webpage at the Spiritual Frequency, so you can find that stuff at your leisure. No big deal. It's a series on practical magic. I just get into, like, how do you really do candle magic? How do you really do sigil magic? And I just go through every month and tackle a subject and break it down into digestible chunks. And I interact with people on Patreon who want me to deal with some individual questions. So I just always want to make myself available.
Right. And I think none of this stuff is inaccessible to anybody. You don't have to be a certain faith practice or something to do. This is, a lot of the stuff is really common sense, practical aspects that we've been doing pretty much for hundreds of thousands of years, as long as we figured, stuff out, like, hey, this rock makes this noise, or I can paint this on a wall in with this kind of clay. So, like, we are very creative beings, and we always figure out. We destroy just as much as we create, but the creation process is one of the most wonderful things about being human that we have.
I mean, I will say this about my magic. While I am traditionally trained in witchcraft, most of the work that I do is intuitive. It comes to me. I'm open to getting some messages, and I'm constantly, like, trying to seek out new ideas, new practices, associate with new people who have different ideas about spirituality, because I never want to get into a place where I'm stagnant. Mm-hmm. I want to keep learning. I want to keep connecting, because my belief, and look, I don't know if it's a fact, but I believe it to be true. You should get used to hearing that on this show. I don't know that it's a fact, but I believe it to be true, and this is it. I believe that magic belongs to everybody. Anybody who is open to the universe can learn about magic. And I believe that anybody that tells you that you have to jump through some hoops in order for them to share some arcane knowledge with you is probably doing so because of their ego, not because they're being driven by spirit to share the information. Because people who are being driven by spirit to share the information, just share it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I am. I always want to make myself available to people. If you have questions, like, I want to answer them. And if I don't know, that's okay. I'll tell you I don't know. I don't know everything. I know a little bit more today than I did yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And the only thing that really makes anyone an authority about anything is that they know a little bit more about it than you do. That's it. Ta-da! There's a big secret of the universe, if you haven't figured that out yet. That, you can be, your authority and your gravitas about any topic is just basically you know a little bit more than the people that you're teaching. Hopefully, we find ourselves in the pathways of people who are good teachers. I have been very blessed that I have had wonderful teachers. I'm sure you had wonderful teachers at school that you still connect with as a chef.
Oh, yeah.
And
just teachers in everyday life. Sometimes I learn things from people who don't even know that they're teaching me.
Yep.
And that's a wonderful experience. I wish I had the presence of mind in every single one of those moments to reach out to a person and go, thank you for a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the knowledge, because we're here to learn. We're here to love, and we're here to be light.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't know that to be a fact. I just believe that to be true. The universe has put us here together to be part of this grand experiment that has to do with our connectivity, not our differences.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with all the things that make us delightfully, sloppily human, and the way that we connect with each other is really all that matters at the end. So I'm just all about respect and love and trying to listen more than I talk, but that's really hard when you're doing a podcast.
And then sometimes you just got to hex a bitch.
Sometimes.
He's just, as Dr. Beverly would say.
Shout out to Dr. Beverly.
Well, that is our Tangi, and we are very grateful that she's in our world here at Greyhaven for sure, and I know she blesses my life every day, so... I'm just getting all mushy on you.
Oh my God, I love you too.
So that is her jam. And of course, you'll get to know her a lot better the more you listen. And
This is probably the profanity warning that you should be given. I curse like a sailor, and I'm not going to apologize for it. So if that kind of language upsets you, just turn the volume down a little bit.
And I swear like a pirate queen, of which I learned from my mother. So it is something I wield with great pride. So
you have been warned.
You have been warned. So that's our girl. And anything else you want to say about yourself? You've got your YouTube channel, got your Patreon, we've got your grown-ass witch teachings.
Right,
kitchening
and if you happen to be in the Twin Cities area and you are witchcraft curious,
yeah.
I am hosting some introduction to witchcraft, just eclectic, general, seeking the witch's way classes at the She Shed in East St. Paul on the last Sunday of the month. If you want more information about that, once again, check out our website. We'll have links there. I'm super excited to talk to everybody about the She Shed because this is a project of my bestie and her housemates have launched to build some community. So I'm really excited to talk to you more about that, but I'm going to ask her about that because that's her baby.
Yeah, so the She Shed is a partnership, a triptychal partnership between myself and my gray sisters. And we are in the historic Hams building complex here in east side of St. Paul. And it's a very tiny neighborhood. We live in actually a part of St. Paul called Railroad Island, which is a very small, almost like village within the east side. And there's so much history here that it is, I'm just still digging into it. We've only been here for just over a year, and we have come to this magical, beautiful 130-year-old house, and now we've got our studio in this wonderful, like, I think the brewery is something like 80 or 90 years old. Maybe
yeah.
Pushing 100?
It's close. It's pushing a century.
It's pushing a century. And there's lots of cool stuff going on there now. There's a lot of artists and small businesses and craft breweries and things that have moved in, and it's going to only just get more foundationally artisanal as time goes by because it's one of the last places in the cities left to develop. But we have named our space the She Shed also because we think that the State Farm commercial with the she or she shed burning down was really funny. So that there was that, but also and most importantly is our desire to connect with the Fae energy from this. We are in the Bluffs, which are Dayton's Bluffs or the Mounds, and they are very sacred grounds. They are very sacred grounds to many indigenous cultures that were here before the city was developed. And they're limestone bluffs that kind of overlook downtown St. Paul. And we have a Swede Hollow, which runs alongside of us. That's literally, if you're from down south in the Ozarks or Missouri, it's a holler. But it is a big gully that runs the length. And so there's a lot of nature around this area, and the Fae energy here is wild in the city. And so we wanted to honor that as the Fairy Mounds. That's what that stands for. And honor some of our heritage as well as magical creatures. So we're creating a, you know, communal, safe, sacred space for practitioners of many different faiths, most especially pagan and heathen, to come together and teach classes and do you know, ceremonies and rituals and that kind of thing. It's a rentable space. Plus, we also I teach my other business, Camp Athena, which I teach women how to access their life and their mindset. I'm a mindset coach for them using the martial arts of Western sword work via the stage combat aspect that I've learned for 30 years.
Yeah, you heard that right. She teaches people how to use a sword to connect with their sovereign spirit.
Yeah.
Let that sink in for a second.
Yeah. So it is a tool to help women engage their sovereignty because we look around in this world and it's very difficult to navigate how we can make a difference when the politics is corrupt. Everything is corrupted. Corporations are people. What's all that about? Another show. And this soul-crushing, spirit-wilting aspect of our life is difficult. And I really, truly believe that the only way we can navigate and not lose our minds through anxiety that's on the rise and fear that's on the rise is to say, well, what can I do with what I have and my skills and how can I make a difference one person at a time? So I love stage combat as much as I love to sing, and I love swords, and I came about it 30 years ago when I was 19 and got really passionate about it and got really good at it in the aspect of for theater and film, which is just offline from a lot of the sword skills that you do if you're a fencer, which is a sport, by the way. And martial arts in the West has been something that's been really kind of coming back to its own right. And I use this skill to help women empower themselves, find their sovereignty, because we need more women leaders to step up to the table in all aspects of life. And confidence is the first thing, and self-possession is the first thing to start that leadership. So that's what Camp Athena is all about. If you are in the Twin Cities and you identify as a woman, then please check me out and love to work with you on that if that zings your bones. And it's awesome to make as many Xenia Warrior princesses and Wonder Womans and all of our pop culture references to female warriors, but females as warriors have been around since the beginning of time. So we're just now starting to excavate enough stuff to go, oh, so women did swing swords, despite what some right-wing people might say, women never pick up swords.
Oh, goodness.
That's a whole other show.
Have a juice box, you big baby.
So the She Shed is just something we've been developing in the last 90 days. We're really excited about it. And Camp Athena has been going on since 2016. And
some wonderful transformational experiences going on. And as somebody who has had the opportunity to work with you at Camp Athena, I can tell you that there have been some times in my life where I have felt this sort of impotent rage, mm-hmm. that I have had my power taken from me, that I have been told that my opinions don't matter, that I had my ideas stolen from me by other people, and just really felt marginalized. And there's something about being able to get into my body and pick up a blade and work through, you know, basically something like katas, so some movements, to connect with my body and understand that I do have a powerful body to carry my powerful spirit. And it was transformational. It allowed me to walk through the world and take up the space that I'm entitled to. So if that's something that you're looking for in your life, I cannot recommend it highly enough. 10 out of 10 would recommend.
Yeah, too kind.
And as far as the She Shed goes, I am so excited about this project and about this resource being made available to our community. Whether you're a pagan musician who wants to do some intimate venue stuff and sit down and do some sets with like a VIP group of people in your audience, if you're a pagan artist who wants to do an art show and exhibit your work, like, the ladies are giving you a safe space to do this. In St. Paul, there's lots of parking. It's a secure building, so we don't have to really worry about any intrusions from people who might want to take issue with a gathering of pagans and heathens. Like, it's a safe and welcoming environment. If you're a spiritual practitioner who's looking to grow your business, maybe you're an energy healer, maybe you're somebody who's selling, you know, woo-woo somewhere and you just need some help, the ladies are putting together some exciting programs and workshops. I think that it's an opportunity for this community to really come together and rally around and help support one another and be collaborative.
Yeah, collaboration is one of the things I get off on. I've been a producer of theatrical film projects, music projects, for well on to 30 years now. And there's something synergistically magical to me. And what part of my magical practice is my ability to discern very quickly who would do really well collaborating with each other and pulling those people together and opening up my Rolodex and saying, I need this person and this person and this person, and we're going to do this thing. And then, you know, it happens. And I have done some weird with a Y stuff in this town that should have never worked. And I've had people who are not necessarily in the magical mindset, but lovely people said, I don't understand how this is working in the middle of February on the river, but it is. And so congratulations that you sold out that show. So it, that's part of the magic of the collaborativeness. And one of my artistic teachers is Maestro Shiloh Sophia McLeod, and she's an amazing contemporary painter and out in California. And she is about creating as much divine feminine art in the world. Like, I think she's far eclipsed as much divine feminine work as there is on the planet in just the last several years that she's been teaching women her methods of the Color of Woman training and the intentional creativity movement, which we like to align the She Shed with. And that is that anything creative with intention, which is what magic really is a vital part of the creatives saving the planet. And I am all on board with everything that I do being a part of that movement, whether it be the sword fighting or the art classes or singing, sonic healing, collaborative work with other artists, preparing gallery shows in our space. You know, my other sisters in Grey Haven here are also amazing artists themselves. And so it is a privilege and an honor to be able to create a space like that and hope that it can, you know, thrive.
I know that it will be successful. Yeah. I'm going to push you into another topic now.
Awesome.
Because I would really like people to become familiar with a few things that, they're terms that are going to come up pretty often while we're talking. And this is one of my favorites that came out of a female singing group that you put together some time ago called the Idyssey.
Mm-hmm.
And then you worked with a couple of other musicians to do something similar in another project called the Pirates of Dreamtime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that you call Chanty Hoo-Ha.
Chanty Hoo-Ha is my term for a technology that has been long forgotten that is being remembered. And that is the ability to just open your pie hole and make whatever noise comes out to work with your body, work with your spirit, work with other people's bodies. And it's in alignment with this frequency stuff that we're talking about. I had the honor and privilege of receiving my training in sonic practices with the acoustic science pioneer Tom Kenyon. He did his very last training in 2011, and several of my Idyssey sisters and I went to go get certified with him. It was a very intensive 150 hours in a week, crazy experience with 500 and something people in a ballroom all week long from 20 different countries. He's a psychoanalyst and addiction a scientist, as well as brain acoustics and a channel. He's a 4-octave range. He's just incredible, incredible. TomKenyon.com. Go check him out. But he channels, and I have been channeling for a long time. Didn't know what it was until such time that I did, and I was called by spirit back in 2007 while I still was working at the Renaissance, while I was working at the Renaissance Fair doing Shakespeare's Love Child, which was a magical group of awesomeness that I did, and sword fighting. Goddess came to me in a dream and said, I need you to gather the women. And it took me about 6 years for that to be fully realized. I kind of stutter started it in 2007, and it wasn't the right time. And then it emerged in the fall of 2009. And we were together for 5 years, and we were a collective of women of all different skill sets. And we came together every week and practiced. I taught the Chanty Hoo-Ha technology, which is largely just in an intuitive feel to understand the frequencies that you're hearing and vocalizing them as a group. One of my favorite classes in college when I was studying for my vocal degree was music and society. And I was exposed to the way music is used in cultures around the world to heal and to help people do rites of passage, as well as cross over when they die and shift their existence from this plane to another. And that was a really driving force with you know, the mother coming to me and saying, I need you to gather the women. It's time for the women to gather. And so that was a crazy ride. we took that to its first conclusion back in 2014. So it'll come back again. I just don't know how.
I believe the Odyssey will ride again.
And Pirates of Dreamtime, it was a 15-year project, musical project with several other well-respected and wonderful musicians. And we Keith went off to Berkeley, and Scott's doing all kinds of other music too. And it was one of my favorite things that I've ever done. And I've done a lot of really wonderful music. I've been very, very blessed. So you can check out Pirates of Dreamtime on Bandcamp. We have our album available there for download. And Odyssey can also be acquired in CD form. I do not have a digital copy of that as of yet. Because why? Because I have 600 CDs in my basement that need to be sold. So
I'm just thinking that, you know, it might be a good time for a little musical interlude. So maybe we could just drop a little of your Sonic Priestess chanty hoo-ha stuff right into the podcast so people can get a taste of what I have been so overjoyed to be able to listen to and participate in.
Thank you, honey. We'll go ahead and do that, and we'll see you on the flip side of that. And we're back. So we were discussing what we wanted our inaugural, I can never say that word right, topic for our show to be. And since it's the beginning of our show, it's ironic and fitting, I think, that we talk about something that's happening in both of our lives in lots of ways, which is also happening in lots of things on the planet, which is endings and how we as humans suck at them. Topic.
Yeah, endings suck. And also, this is another one of those language warnings. We're probably at some point, maybe not this show. Oh, it's going to happen right now. Vagina.
Yeah, I'm going to say vagina a lot.
Yeah, it's just a thing. So buckle up. All right, so we're talking about endings because astrologically, there's some stuff going on right now with a couple celestial bodies that kind of get a bad rep. I'm talking about Saturn.
And Pluto.
And Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Saturn the way I try and remember the way these planets work, Saturn has these rings around it that are boundaries, right? So for me, Saturn's always about like rules and authority and structure, and things will be done this way because things have always been done this way. And Pluto is like this, like the most far distant, darkest, mysterious planet. And the mystery that we humans are most fascinated with and most terrified of is death.
And we suck at that too.
Oh yeah, that's a big ending.
It's a big ending and it's a big beginning, but at the same time, we, especially here in the West, super, super bad at it. So bad at it.
So what we wanted to talk about is what we're seeing in our own daily lives and what we're seeing unfold on the world stage seems to be a lot of old structures getting shook down to their foundations and a lot of people clinging to them no matter what.
And if anything, that both of us have dealt a lot with doing a lot of different kinds of death rituals and a lot of different kinds of work with death, I identify and have stepped out into the path of the Valkyrie as a part of my spiritual work. And I work a lot with my Nordic pantheon of the Nordics of, you know, Freya and Odin and Thor and all that. And we talk in our Eddic sagas about things like Ragnarok. We see it in our popular culture, especially with the Avengers stuff coming through. And it's not the end of the world, it is the end of the age. And that kind of is the way I look at death. Like, it's not an ending of everything, it is the ending of what I am expressing right now. And then I will go on to something else. And so I have done a small bit of assisting people transitioning as a sonic priestess, and it is always a very honored position to be in, to help them find the doorway. Can never help anybody through the doorway. You can just show them the doorway and help them understand that it's okay for them to let go, and whether it be pets or people. But one of the things I have a problem with in my own personal life is I have attachments to attachments, and that could be attachments to people, and never really wanting to allow when contracts have finished between people or between ideas or between ventures or businesses. You know, that is a real problem I have. I think the country and the world has the same problem.
I think, now, again, I don't know, it's a fact, but I believe it to be true. I believe that right now the structures that are falling away, these old structures that need to fall away, are based upon the concept of scarcity. So that we have been conditioned to believe that there's just not enough for everybody.
And, which is total crap.
Yeah, it's not true, but it's what we've been conditioned to believe. So if you are coming at things from a mentality of scarcity, that there's just not enough, doesn't it make it harder for you to let go of what you've got for fear that there won't be something to take its place?
And I think that the understanding that I have from my friends in astrology, I know enough about astrology to be dangerous, but this Saturn-Pluto conjunct in Capricorn we just went through on January 12th, which was the first time that's happened in over 500 years, I think 535, but I could be wrong. Google fool that shit. We're talking about this taskmaster that is Saturn, that is about bringing in the new, and you have Pluto, the god of the underworld, taking away that which no longer serves, or with that which has putrefied and needs to be removed, happening together at the same time, which means that the scaffolding that's built around whatever you're trying to build new is erected around that which has to go away, but it can't. The two can't occupy the same space. They have to occupy next to each other. And then do we what? Jump on the scaffolding and hope we win?
Oh my God, guys. So she went with the Avengers. I'm going to go to Fraggle Rock.
Okay.
Because here's what's happening. The little doozers are building this new structure, or they're maintaining or trying to like shore up this old structure, right? And the Fraggles are coming along and ripping it down and eating it and going on with their lives. It's that same kind of energy. There are some people that are trying to shore up these old structures with all the energy that they've got, and they're just not aware of the fact that the universe is coming along and pulling pieces of it off and eating it and recycling it into something new. Right?
And then later pooping it out into something else.
Yeah.
Because it's another thing we'll probably talk a lot about on this show is pooping. Because I have a fascination with pooping. And that's a whole other show.
We got to edit that out.
Elevator music. No, we do not.
Elevator music.
There is no editing of the pooping. Anyway, back to endings.
So that just, like, I was just seeing the image in my head when you were talking about it. I was like, it's totally the Fraggles and the Doozers. The Doozers are trying to maintain the structures and the Fraggles are eating them and getting them out of the way. So that then the Doozers can build new structures.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the precipice that we're on. And I'm seeing that manifest in my own life where I'm having to make some endings and in some relationships and some associations because those things are no longer serving me for the purpose that I'm on. It's not that I don't like these people or that I'm dissatisfied with what our relationship has given me. It's just that I realize that it's at a point where it's no longer conducive for anybody involved to continue to put energy into something that's falling away.
Right, and I think, too, that can also be in your phases of life. Like, right now, I am very entranced with the journey trajectory of my 20-year-old niece, who is a crystal licker in the making, much like her auntie, which is wonderful to see her finding all of the things that I found when I was 19 on the spiritual path that I chose. I mean, I went through all the processes of the, the Christian, but my parents very gratefully did not raise my brother and I with a lot of dogma of the Christian. They're like, hey, golden rule, be nice to everybody, don't be a dick. It's good, right? Go outside to talk to God if you want to do that. And so I had a lot of nature-based stuff, and my niece grew up in the same environment of not a lot of dogma, and she grew up on the same farm that I did. But to watch her come upon these things that she can find on the internet a lot easier than what we did when we were younger, where we're like, where's the information? It's not in the Encyclopedia Britannica. So I'm fascinated with this idea that at different stages of your life, you have different kinds of endings. And I just crossed the gateway of 50 a couple months ago. And it's amazing to me how other friends of mine who are older than me have said, when you reach this thing, your fucks have flown, And I thought, there can't be a magical decoder ring. It's just not that easy. But in some ways it is. But is it that my fucks have flown, or is it that my intentions of what I'm willing to spend my energy on have shifted? Because I don't have as much energy as I did when I was 20. So that's a different kind of ending and a different kind of beginning. And I think that we do not honor here in the West, especially, those kind of transitions as they do in other places in the world.
No, and it's a problem. It's a systemic problem. So when you talk about your niece and seeing her find her own path and like find this information and stuff, it's interesting to talk about that because we're in a place where our elders are competing with our children for the same opportunities, for the same jobs, for, in a lot of cases, the same romantic opportunities, because women don't age anymore. They just go get plastic surgery. So we're dealing with lessons on like letting go and embracing the new thing that's happening in your life and the new things that are available to you. But what I find most often is the things that I cling to tenaciously become pain points for me.
Mm-hmm. I think it really is interesting in popular culture, especially with the machine that is Disney and the mouse. When I saw Frozen, I was on a plane, very upset about the customer service stuff that I had experienced there, coming back from Los Angeles, having been on a spiritual pilgrimage to the Goddess Temple in Indian Springs in the desert for the very first time. And then we went to Los Angeles, and I was meeting the Pacific Ocean for the very first time. So it was a week-long, arduous pilgrimage. Literally, what was missing was chickens on the damn bus and me riding an ass for a while. And I went with two of my friends, and we had this incredibly, it was this epic journey. But coming back, we were given, as a way to placate my upsetness, they gave us a free movie, which was Frozen, and I hadn't seen it yet. And I was listening to it with one earbud and sharing it with my friend. And the imagery of this story pissed me off to no end. And I can't tell if I haven't watched it again since. But, you know, that whole idea of how let it go, let it go, let it go. And the song and how so many girls just grabbed onto that throughout the world. And that story should be empowering. It should be this thing. And yet here I was, super pissed. And I don't know if it's because I suck at endings and I didn't want to let shit go. But it's really interesting how that is there as medicine, but yet are we really listening to that?
Well, I think, I said this earlier, and so we've given a language warning. A lot of times, because we're afraid that there's not enough, we will hold on to things that really are pointless. You'll hold on to a bag of shit just so you can be holding on to something. You'll hold on to shitty, abusive, toxic relationships just so you can be in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You'll hold on to a job where you're treated like garbage and you're not fairly compensated for your time and skills and talents just so you have a job. And I think we're moving to a place as a species where we're being told you don't get the luxury of worrying about these mundane things anymore because you are a spiritual being and you have to get in alignment with the vibration. And the vibration is changing. We are shifting out of a Piscean age, which is all of this fish energy, all of this. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, the Christians got the fishes on their cars. That's this authoritarian energy. And we're trying to shift into this Aquarius energy, which is totally different. And the people are clinging to these old ways for fear that if they let go of their perceived power and position, that they will be without. Because they do not have faith that other people will take care of them.
And that's a real valid fear. You know, we're looking at the baby boomers accessing healthcare in a way that is crippling, and it is, and we're not even at the peak yet. And I know, you know, we just had some stuff with my mom this week, and I'm hoping she'll be here for quite some time yet. But you know, you've had stuff with your mom. It's scary to know that, you know. I think part of it was too, like, we're conditioned in this country, like, you're 18, get the fuck out of the house, go be a person. And you can't do that right now. Like,
no.
My niece is living at home at 20, and she'll probably live there till she's 25 because she can't afford to do any of that. So it's, again, that scarcity frequency, that poverty mentality, that there's not enough, and yet there is plenty for everybody. Even though we're watching the horror of the news of endings happening where Australia as an entire continent is on fire, and all of these, we've lost billion something animals, and it just breaks my soul apart every single day. And you know, we lost a big chunk of the Amazon earlier in last year. And so how much of that is the planet frequency also trying to tell us, look, if you don't let go, we're gonna make you.
Well, I have some very like weird thoughts about what's going on with the planet as it relates to the oppression of the divine feminine.
Right, which is a whole other show.
A whole other show. But you guys, I'm just telling you, if the divine feminine is rising, it's because she's coming to clean house.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, we have talked very much about the dark mother energy and what that is. And I come from a very disciplinary mother who was pretty much the, like, clean your room. And the third time she's asked me, and I don't do it, I come home from school and all my shit is gone. Because she's like, I warned you. I told you to clean up your shit. Clean up your room. And I think so much of that is happening right now, that these endings are being kind of forced upon people, and you may feel very disempowered, like, why is this happening to me? But yet, if you really are, put your grown-up pants on and you take a look at your life, you go, this is stuff that I've just been pushing off and avoiding, whether it be that relationship or that job or what have you. And it's because endings are hard, because even as we deal, I think it's a direct correlation with how we do not deal with death well. means we do not know how to handle endings well, because it is a death.
Well, here's a news flash. I don't know if you all know this yet, but you're going to die. It's coming. So accept that fact and use it so that you can start living.
Correct.
And living means taking risk. It means flying by the seat of your pants. It means not waiting until I'm settled enough or financially stable enough to take that trip to Tibet or wherever it is you want to go. If your soul is telling you that you need to get on a plane and go to Australia and save some koalas, then you need to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because the time is now, and the clock is running out for all of us. I'm not just talking about old age and sickness. Like, anything could happen. You could walk out on the street and have a car run you down tomorrow, and would you have lived your life?
Well, and I think, too, like, there is a person that I clock into every single day. I get up in the morning, and before I'm even out of bed, I do my prayer work, and then I clock into this rogue meteorologist named Ben Davis, and he has a wonderful site called Suspicious Observers, and the Observers is spelled with a zero, .com, and he also has spaceweathernews.com, and he does a lot of hard science looking at our universe, the sun, how it affects us, how we're connected to it, the plasma, electromagnetic connection of the sun with the planet, which is all frequency.
We're back to frequency again.
And how that is affecting, and then also things like looking at core samples of ice and stuff that have told us what has happened before, because it's just a proven fact that the magnetic poles are moving, and they've been moving quite rapidly recently, and we are looking at the potential for there to be another extreme extinctual event. When the poles flip, we don't really know what really happens, but we can kind of sort of guess by what we see, but by what's happened, because we have amazing technology that can look at all that data. And it's just a bunch of scientists trying to figure out what does it mean, because we don't know, but yet our ancients knew. And they left us lots of clues. And again, whole other show.
Yeah, there's a whole blog section for conspiracies. So
yeah. And this isn't even really conspiracy, but it is just a fact that the magnetic are moving of the planet, and so some of what we're experiencing is a direct result of that, and it's going to keep happening, and you can't avoid it. There's nothing human, the hubris of humans that make me laugh about how we think we have such a big effect on the big, huge organism. We do, like, it's common sense. Don't shit in the pool if you're going to be swimming in it, because gross, right? You're going to get sick. But for the most part, at any time, Mama Gaia will just etch-a-sketch shake us off and start the frick over.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, if you poop in the pool's still going to be there.
Right.
You're the one that's going to get Ebola or whatever and die off. And that's just what the planet is telling us. Like, keep doing what you're doing. It's fine. You're just going to kill yourself. I'm going to continue to be here. I'm going to bring new life out of the ashes.
And humans will, like barnacles, cling to whatever and reemerge themselves. Like cultures have come and gone and come and gone and come and gone. However, for you personally, you have time and you don't have time. And I think that's the hardest thing, is we all know that time is a construct that we think is linear, and it's not. It's all happening at the same time. So we aren't, it's, what is your saying? It's not a proven fact, but I believe.
I believe it's true.
And so in this time that you have, I guess the ask that we have for the show today is, when you look at your life and you're struggling, or you have the anxieties or the feeling of hopelessness and fear, which a lot of people are having, a lot of people are not knowing how to navigate these feelings and these ending times. We are coming to an end of an era. The Piscean age is ending, and with it always comes big upheaval, period. And so look around in your life, and what are the things that you need to clean your room? Like, it's time now. Like, those boxes you haven't opened for 10 years, go through them, get rid of stuff, and get rid of them properly, you know? Be responsible about it. Like, that's really what's being asked. If you're going to poop in the pool, that's fine. Stuff happens. Shit happens. Poo happens. Then clean it up so that nobody else gets sick and you don't sicken yourself. You know, we talk about pigs being the fat on the land earlier. I raise pigs on the farm, and they are the smartest dang creatures in the world. They poop in one corner. They don't muck their mud up. So a lot of people think that they're very unclean, and yet they're one of the cleanest farm animals that you could possibly imagine, you know. But it is like, transmute your shit. And do it now because you'll feel better.
And look, if you're not sure what the stuff is that you need to let go of, let me tell you, there's some signs. And I like to say this. I learned everything I needed to learn about my life and the things that needed to be surrendered and the things that needed my attention from watching The Wizard of Oz. Because here's the thing. Follow the yellow brick road. Stay on the yellow brick road. What happens every time Dorothy and her cast of misfit toys get off of the yellow brick road?
Calamity.
Something bad.
Poppies.
So if there is something in your life that's bad, that's giving you trouble, that's giving you anxiety, that's giving you an ulcer, that's keeping you awake at night, chances are that's something you need to look at because it might be time to let it go.
And get back on the road.
Get back on the road. Life is short. Are you doing what you want to do with your life?
That's a really big question. And with that, I think utilizing every tool that you can, whether it be people that you can help, you know, coach or counsel or talking to a healthcare professional, reaching out to people that you trust and cultivating friends. And, you know, speaking of frequency and friendships or relationships, you know, I have a lot of friends back from high school still, and we can come and go from each other's lives relatively easeful. And then there's the peeps that you have in your inner circles. And my biggest problem that I have with attachment is when I am a friend, I am all in. But that's not where everybody can live. And I totally respect and understand that. I don't like it. I wish everybody would do that too. But that's not what everybody's capable of, and that is something that I'm learning every single day to remind myself to be in grace and compassion about the fact that not everybody can friend the way I do. But it's also that cultivating your garden. My mother gave me the greatest advice when I was young, that your people you have in your everyday life, aside from your family, because some people have good relationships with their families and sometimes they don't, but your friends that you cultivate in that garden that you're weeding are the people that are going to get you through your, you know, cancer bouts and your breakups and your job losses and those things and your joys, your loves and your births and all of that stuff. But there comes a time where you have to stop raising a certain crop because the soil is tired and it needs to be refreshed or it needs to be rotated around. And that's always hard to understand because sometimes those contracts come to an end. And it is not about that person being a bad person or not being, you know, hopefully they're not abusive, but letting that go and understanding that everything has its season is really difficult for us in the modern world because we do not have connection to our food anymore. We don't have connections to the cycles. I'm very grateful I live here in Minnesota because we kind of sort of still have four seasons. But I have friends who live in Los Angeles where it's 70 degrees all the time. So I'm like, how do you know what day it is? How do you know? And so this whole ability to allow is a big challenge for everybody right now.
Well, and I have gone through multiple friend breakups and like the dissolution of friend groups. And since I've started like really working on my spiritual journey and really shifting my focus to, you know, being in concert with the universe and listening to spirit, I've had to let some friendships go. And it's not that I don't care for those people anymore, but it is that we're not vibrating on the same frequency. And it's painful.
Yes.
Like, even if you don't realize where the pain is coming from, it's painful. It's painful for everyone involved. It manifests as jealousy. It manifests as bitterness. It manifests as pettiness. And, you know, and you just don't know where this came from because you've been friends for 10 years and all of a sudden it comes out of nowhere. And it's because one of you has bumped up to a different frequency. And that change is so dissonant.
Correct.
That it causes pain. And it's unbearable to stay in that situation. So the options are to get your friend to level up to where you are or to bring yourself down to where they still are so that you can interact with one another. But it's not tenable for very long.
And it's also about, you know, I speak a lot in our training with Camp Athena about sovereignty and about free will. And you don't really have a right to ask anybody to, like, level up. Like, would you just level up, please? Like, that's not that's their job. That's their job and their desire and their intention, and we want to ask, and a lot of times we do ask, and that's really inappropriate.
You have to decide if you want to spend your time trying to help them get there, and if that's endurable for you, because sometimes it's not bearable.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the best thing that can happen is an ending.
To which we come back to the endeth the suckage.
Yes, it sucks. It hurts. It's terrible. You feel broken.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you've failed. But here's the thing that I have to constantly remind myself when I'm dealing with an ending. It's just this. Every time I've gone through a season in my life where there have been rocky endings and like lots of things coming to a close and just like losing relationships that I've been cultivating for years or a job or whatever, what happens from that devastation is something so much greater than I could have imagined manifest in my life. I went through a period of time before I met you that I went through a purging of friends, and I was sad and lonely, and I felt like something was wrong with me. Like, why didn't these people want to be friends with me anymore? And then I looked at you across festival grounds one day and went, oh,
you're making me cry.
There it is. There's my reason. There's the one person that's going to fill the void that these four or five people left behind. Now, what does that say about the quality of that relationship? I had to be willing to sacrifice some pawns to get my queen.
And she literally walked up to me, and Tangie is much shorter than me. I'm 6'5", and you're what?
5'2".
5'2". And she looked up with these big, huge eyes, and she's like, we're going to be friends. And I'm like, yes, we are. Like, alrighty. And it was that easy. And it was an amazing gift that walked across the field at me. And it is a gem in my life. And I hope I get to have it as long as I get to have it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's been a gift for both of us. We have been pulling and pushing each other along the way ever since. And I have no regrets other than, like, I didn't meet you sooner. But I don't think I was ready for our relationship until that moment.
Right. And I know that there are a bazillion relationships that I have had and that was served. And I know that's one of my biggest challenges as a soul is to navigate with peace in my soul those endings. And it's so ironic that I, you know, connect myself to death maidenness, but yet I so suck at letting that stuff go. So it is definitely, you know, when these frequencies come upon you to act a certain way or do a certain thing, it is always good to take a look at the big picture. And I think that's another thing that we have to remember when we're talking about frequencies and relationships ending is sometimes you need to jack up into the eagle eye view to take a look at the trajectory of where these relationships fell on your timeline or your yellow brick road while they were happening, because sometimes that's the perspective you have to see to go, oh, that's why. And it's not take it so personally, and that it is a failure on either part of the friend, and that we all fight and suddenly go back to middle school recess taunts, and you know, like everybody needs their sippy cup and a nap. You know, so it's my juice box. I get to play Charlie, you know, Charlie's Angels this time. I get to be Farrah.
It's fine. You can be Farrah. I'm not playing. I think the thing about endings is that we're just really afraid of the unknown. We're really afraid of the uncertainty, and we're really afraid of coming up empty-handed. But sometimes, my darlings, you have to be empty-handed, because the next part of the journey, you're going to have to free climb.
Yep.
You're going to need all of your hands and all of your feet to get up that cliff, and you can't do that if you're encumbered by stuff that's just not going to help you get there. And it's cold comfort when you're going through it, but know that there's a purpose.
And I think for me, one of the things that I always try to remember too is we came into this world alone, and we will leave this world alone only in the sense that we are only responsible for our own sovereign being. However, the journey gets to be peppered with, you hope, if you've cultivated a good life, wonderful experiences. And every single person you meet is contractually engaged with you, whether they're your arch nemesis, or they're your best friend, or they're your mom, or they're your child, or your dick boss. Like, you know, all of them have a purpose to teach you something. It's whether you can recognize in the moment that that's what's happening. And if you ever want to, like, read those archetypes, like, Carolyn Miss wrote an amazing book called Sacred Contracts. I got to hear her speak when she was on tour of it, and she had just turned 50, and her fucks had flown also. So I take great, like, knowledge in that I can't wait till I was 50, because I think I encountered her when I was in my 40s. So check that book out. Really will help you with your endings, and that's a tool we can share with you for right now to help navigate this. Be gentle with yourself. Be kind with yourself and other people. We're all just stumbly fucking around in the dark, hoping we make it out alive. And sometimes, hopefully, we are able to die with grace and get the hell out. So, with that, I think we can move on to our next part.
Yeah, we're just sucking at an ending again.
Yeah, we're sucking. So I'm just going to clip it. Because one of the things we want to do to support our themes that we talk about is to do close our show with a wonderful reading from any kind of oracle that we can kind of conduit with spirit and say, what are the wrap-up messages?
So our reading for this week is from the Goddess Guide Me Oracle by Amy Zerner and Monty Farber. And it goes something like this. So the Goddess Guide Me Oracle kit has a set of three dice.
Because we're total geeky gamers, so you know.
Oopsie, I just have one.
And so this beautiful, it's got some beautiful pictures that are, the artwork is of the goddesses is split into three chunks, the head, the heart, and the lower part of the body.
The foundation. So there's a die that corresponds with each part, the head, the heart, and the foundation. So you roll the dice.
And you get the numbers.
To ask which goddesses want to answer your question. And our question this week was, Goddess Guide Me. How can I best align the energies of my head and heart to recognize what I need to let go of or end in my life?
Right now.
And who has appeared?
What we have here is in our head aspect, we have Aphrodite, who showed up as the goddess of affection. And this is about thinking affectionately, which is about being kind and being compassionate. And her statement is, I am surrounded by possibilities for pleasure. I may experience many delightful encounters before I find true love. And basically, she's talking about going into those soft places. It's pretty harsh out right now. And so remembering that we're here for joy and we're here for love and laughter and realizing that there's no other purpose for us being here except those things. And she asks you to take that moment to just kind of go into that part of your being that remembers what that is in relationships. And when she asks you to be in relation with people, those things need to be present. And if they're not present, if a relationship is incapable of kind of capturing that, it's in danger of failing. And that's usually a red flag that maybe the frequency is out of alignment. And she asks you to be inspiring and helpful in the creative process with yourself and your partners, but be that a lover or a spouse or a friend. Or a family member. And she also says, don't worry, be charming and gay, because we need a lot more of that in the world.
Yes, please.
And so.
So Aphrodite, get warm namaste, please.
Yes, right. The next we have, which is governing the heart aspect, is the goddess of discernment, which is Artemis. And her statement is, I feel all my past anxiety has been a waste of time. I always deal successfully with whatever circumstances arise. And she's about feeling capable. I think anxiety for a lot of people is because of a lack of control. And control can be a good thing and control can be an out of balance thing. So I think when it comes to this aspect of discernment, which I talk about discernment all the time, because one of the things I think we're losing as a culture is our ability to vet and discern, especially when we're looking at things like all this data on the internet. You need to trust your intuition and you need to understand that not everything that is said to you is truth. You need to feel the truth as opposed to having it programmed or dictated to you. And a lot of times our emotions create unfound fears that are hyper and analytical of the way things are, and we need to be able to reach fruition in anything we do with ease and believing that we're capable. And so I think Artemis brings to us this representing that there's just shit we don't know, and we have to be at peace with that. We're not going to know, and it's not going to unfold until the moment that it unfolds. And that's the way it is. It doesn't mean that you can't be prepared, but it also just means that you just need to be feeling like you're going to be able to handle whatever shows up. And that's about confidence, and that's about capability, which you're all capable of and you all can do when you just take a breath and realize that it's all going to be okay. And the last part, which is our foundational aspect, which is the goddess Freya, and that is about leadership. And it's about leading the way. And I find it very interesting that she comes up, because her statement is about, I am confident that I know what must be done in my life and in the lives of others, and I accept the responsibility of leadership. And I think leadership is a very important topic to wrap the show up with, because this morning, so I listen to Deepak Chopra every day on Instagram. I follow him, he's just awesome. I've got to meet him. He's just this amazing vibrational being of just epicness. And today his topic was about the divine feminine needing to be called to the stage at the world level, and that the archetypal aspects that we need to be looking at to bring leaders to the table that are more women, and at least bring it to that 50%, which we are a long, long way off. We are a single digit of women at the table of any peace talks or anything like that, and that has to change. And I believe it is changing. And it is going to change a lot more rapidly, I think. But, you know, Freya here is talking about leadership being critical to your ability to respond to authority and to behave consistent and dependably. And I think we're all looking for that leadership model. And Deepak was talking this morning about the seven different, he called in seven different goddesses. So I thought it was hilarious that you showed up with this today. Cause I'm like, really? So he pulled seven different archetypal aspects that he believes will create a solid body of the divine feminine in people, women in leadership. So I highly recommend you follow him on Instagram. He's every single day, and his new book, Metahuman, is just awesome. But so Freya comes into this at the foundational level of leadership today in our reading, because she's about standing on your sacred stone, standing on your foundation that says you are capable, like Artemis has already inferred to us, but that you are bold and fearless in your ability to transcend individual egos and to be able to be organized in gathering the people that need to work together. Because leadership just isn't about do what I say. Leadership is about understanding people's assets and their skill sets and leading them to coalesce together to a greater good. That is what a good leader does, in my opinion.
Well, and we're back to collaboration.
Correct. You know, and it's the, because organizing and planning is vital. And, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, it's like what Deepak said this morning. The patriarchy, the Piscean age, it is coming to an end. It is having its own ending. And in the ending, it's going to thrash in its death throes like anything. Your body, even though you're ready to go, will fight. Your physical organism will fight to take its last breath and gasp because it does not want to leave. It will fight you. And so this patriarchal aspect is over, it's coming to an end, and a new principle of compassion and collaboration, I think, is coming to the table in the Aquarian age, and that is going to see a lot more women in leadership. So I think it's really beautiful that, you know, thank you to Aphrodite and Artemis and Freya for showing up for us in this reading today. I think that is a lot of information for a lot of our listeners too.
I know, and thank you, Freya, for kicking it back to Saturn and talking to us about authority. And that's dealing with that patriarchal structure, like that's an authoritarian thing going on,
mm-hmm.
and we need to stand in a place of confidence be able to make decisions based upon discernment rather than emotion,
mm-hmm.
and to make those decisions coming from a place of love rather than a place of anxiety or fear.
Mm-hmm. My teacher Shiloh talks about the creative process with the intentional creativity, and it's very, and I talk about this in terms of how we identify where things are in our chakra system when we're working with sword work with Kampathena. So again, all tied together. But I would like to leave you with this homework assignment, and that is, in the discernment process, as you're looking at these things in your life that you're finding that you need to, you realize that they need to come to an end, is bring that information through the top of your head into your crown chakra and your third eye. That's into our brain. That's our logical center. That's our the cold star energy that comes down from the ether, from the heavens, and says, here's the thing. The next system that needs to weigh in on that is your solar plexus or your gut. Trust your gut, trust your intuition. And it's the second brain. But it is also the thing that also, when we're in our parasympathetic or sympathetic system, we want to be in our parasympathetic system, not our sympathetic. Because a sympathetic is like, velociraptor, like it's coming to eat me. So make sure that when you are in your intuition, in your solar plexus, that you are not in, oh my gosh, a lion's going to eat me mode, while you're asking yourself this question about what has come in. Like, does this relationship serve me anymore? I need to, like, think about it, and then I need to emotionally, you know, respond with my solar plexus. Then you bring it up to your heart, and your heart, which is what some believe is the seat of the soul, is the place where Mott's balance of justice is, and you weigh it here with emotion that says, okay, and then what's my course of action? So I have the information, I have how I feel about the information, and then my heart and my soul is going to say, this is what I need to do about it, because it's the judgment era. It's the vetting and discerning place. And when she put that to me as a creative, and I was like, oh my God, this is how, like, the muse talks to me. And then I go, oh, I have this idea. And then my stomach goes, oh, you got to do it because it's scary. And then I put it up to my heart and I'm like, yes, let's make this happen. And so she was absolutely right. So this is your homework, to use this pattern if you wish. To look at your life and see what kind of endings you can gracefully and compassionately come to with kindness of Aphrodite and the capability of Artemis and the foundation of how does this make you a better leader with Freya. And with that, I think that's a beautiful, beautiful gift that we can give to you today.
Thanks so much for tuning in, and we look forward to connecting with you again next week on the Spiritual Frequency.